Welcome to another episode of the Top Tens Podcast, Daily Top Ten Lists. I'm your host, Simon, and in today's episode, this is the audio version of a video that we originally published on YouTube. Here for your listening convenience. If you like this show, please do consider leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. That would be awesome, and let's get into it.
Hello, I'm Simon Whistler. You're watching Top Tens Net, and in the video today, the top 10 nefarious secret police forces from throughout history. Secret police forces have existed since time immemorial, from the frumentarii of ancient Rome to the mass digital surveillance of today. And while they're more commonly associated with some of the most nefarious dictatorships on the planet, these unaccountable state-funded heavies with a license to snoop have become increasingly and unnervingly banal, perhaps even cynically expected, all over the world. More than 100 secret police forces were set up in the last century alone, not least in the US and Europe, with many more following today. And with so many examples to choose from, well, here we're choosing 10 of the absolute worst. And just before we get started with the video today, I do want to say that there's lots of difficult foreign pronunciations in this one. I am trying my best, and also there's ones like number 10, which is OVRA, but maybe it's supposed to be pronounced OVRA. I try looking them up, I do my best. If you want to have a go at me in the comments, go for it. Number 10. OVRA, 1927 to 1945. Largely dependent on civilian tip-offs, the Italian OVRA, Organization for Vigilance and Repression of Anti-Fascism, even had informants with informants of their own, including Baise Pepeschi, informer number 35, and a private network of almost 40 subordinate spies. Between 1926 and 1943, 17,000 civilians, mostly anti-fascist thinkers and intellectuals, were confined to rural surveillance enclaves where their lives were tightly controlled. 160,000 others, including Jews, were subject to restriction on their activities and movements. Some of those grassed up and arrested were guilty of nothing more than telling jokes about Mussolini. OVRA was also notorious for enforcing a kind of sexual fascism, actively preventing abortions and demonizing homosexuality. The goal, apparently, was to strengthen the Italian race. Throughout his time in power, Mussolini had a powerful rival, the Roman Catholic Church. Despite agreeing on a great many issues, including the problem of Jews, and also despite attempts to forge a Vatican fascist alliance, there remained a mutual distrust between them. For this reason, the OVRA set about gathering intelligence on senior Catholic pederasts, planning to blackmail them into submission. Mussolini himself is said to have enjoyed reading reports on some of the saucier priests' sex lives, including that of Pope Pius XI's close personal friend, Monsieur Camillo Caesia Dominini, a cardinal who lured young boys to his apartment for sex. Number 9. COINTELPRO, from 1956 to 1971. The aptly named counterintelligence program was set up during the 1950s as the federal government's response to beatniks, hippies, pacifists, and pretty much anyone else who questioned the status quo. As a secret branch of the FBI, the organization listed, surveilled, infiltrated, discredited, and disrupted various left-leaning individuals and political organizations, from Vietnam War protesters to civil rights activists, including feminists, African Americans, and even Native Americans, but they were mostly interested in discrediting Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose increasing influence and upcoming Nobel Peace Prize had become infuriating to J. Edgar Hoover himself. As part of their campaign against him, COINTELPRO agents broke into and bugged Dr. King's home and then sent a letter to him, purportedly from a delusioned admirer, decrying his alleged adulterous acts and immoral conduct. Evidence in the form of a dubious audio recording was enclosed and sent to his wife. The letter finished by appearing to call for his suicide, promising 34 days until his filthy, abnormal, fraudulent self was to be bared to the nation. It ended ominously with, "There is only one thing left for you to do. You know what it is." Right-wing groups like the Ku Klux Klan were also monitored, but were evidently deemed less of a threat. In fact, when an undercover COINTELPRO agent was involved in the KKK murder of civil rights activist Viola Liuzzo in 1965, the Klansmen were let off lightly amid various rumors that Liuzzo was a communist who abandoned her children to have interracial sexual relations with radicals. Indeed, the FBI is also known to have actively financed and armed certain right-wing groups, including the Secret Army Organization, to carry out attacks on black rights activists, political protesters, and left-wing academics. COINTELPRO officially came to an end in 1971, and Hoover's successor, Clarence Kelly, kind of apologized for some of their activities. But tellingly, he also had the gall to defend them, whitewashing the entire program as good faith efforts to prevent bloodshed and the wanton destruction of property in the violent 60s. Number 8. The Mardahith, from 1924 until the present. The longest-running secret police force on this list belongs to Saudi Arabia, a nation known for its bizarre commitment to tyranny. More formally known as Al-Mahabit Al-Hamar, or the General Investigation Directorate, the Mardahith are so paranoid about controlling the Saudi populace that even kids are detained without trial, and they are subject to ongoing torture. At least 12 have been sentenced to death. In September of 2014, 13-year-old Muqtaha al-Gariras became yet another shameful statistic. He was arrested for traveling to see his father in Bahrain without first notifying the state. The boy spent a month in solitary confinement and a total of 2 years and 8 months in prison, all without formal charge or trial. During this time, he was mercilessly beaten and tortured. All of this was, of course, in direct contravention of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as well as the UN Human Rights Council, of which Saudi Arabia remains a curiously oblivious member. Last year, aged just 16, Mataya was moved to a notorious Mardahith-controlled prison, where further torture will likely secure the confessions needed to convict him, and maybe even sentence him to death. Number 7. The Stasi, from 1950 to 1990. The Stasi, or the State Security Service of East Germany, had around 280,000 citizens on their payroll. Fascinatingly, this is more employees than Starbucks has worldwide today. Officially, the agency employed just 90,000 people full-time, but had a network of 189,000 unofficial collaborators, or IMs. In a way, they comprised the true shield and the sword of the state. Actually, this army of civilian spies may have numbered as many as 500,000, or even 2 million, if occasional informers are also to be included in the statistics. To put this in some perspective, the Gestapo during World War II had just 40,000 officials, and the whole of Germany, that's 80 million people, to keep an eye on, while the Stasi, they had at least 4 times that many agents and barely 17 million citizens to monitor. So while under the Nazis there was a Gestapo officer for every 2,000 people, but under the Stasi there may have been 1 informant for every 8.5 citizens. Pretty much a spy at every dinner party, in other words, and certainly one in every building. Worse, the Stasi's reign of terror lasted decades longer than the Gestapo's. The Stasi's MIs came from all walks of life and pervaded every facet of East German society. Colleagues informed on colleagues, teenagers spied on their classmates, and even children kept reports on their parents. In fact, it's thought that up to 10,000 IMs, a sizable chunk of the total, were under the age of 18. Nobody was out of bounds. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, journalists, and even clergymen and celebrities were signed up to spy for the state, often through bribery or blackmail. Confessionals were bugged, bathrooms were filmed, targets were stalked, and private records were ransacked. The idea was to gather as much dirt as possible on pretty much every citizen, just on the off chance that they might one day question the state. And if they did, the state was ready to hit back, implementing their infamous strategy of Zergetzung to shut down individuals and groups via tailor-made campaigns of sadistic psychological warfare. This might involve anything from sowing discord among friends, to blackmail and bribery, to sneaking into apartments and rearranging the furniture. The Stasi were also known for the tampering of alarm clocks, putting socks in the wrong drawers, slashing tires, and ordering goods in the victim's name, all calculated to just wear their subjects down. Such was the extent of the Stasi's data collection that the agency left behind 111 kilometers of paperwork, measured spine to spine, more than 1.4 million photos and recordings, and 39 million index cards. According to the DDR Museum in Berlin, this is more documentation than was collected in the whole of Germany, not just the eastern half from the Middle Ages to Hitler's defeat. Number 6. The 610 Office, from 1999 to the present. The Chinese Communist Party, CCP, consolidates its ideological position on various contentious issues through what they call central leading groups, secretive think tanks headed up by the Politburo Standing Committee. The most notorious of these in recent times has been the Leading Group for Preventing and Handling the Problem of Heretical Organizations. This seeks to monitor and suppress politically dangerous religions, like, you know, Buddhism. Number 5. Tonton Macou, from 1958 to 1986. Under François Papadoc Duvalier and his young son Jean-Claude, Haiti was a nightmarish place to live. Between them, they oversaw the imprisonment and execution of tens of thousands of civilians, a fact that's all the more appalling given that Papadoc was a medical doctor. Of course, they couldn't have done it alone. Shortly after his rise to power, François Duvalier established the terrifying Tonton Macou, or Uncle Gunnysack, a violent secret police force named after the child-eating Santa Claus of Haitian folklore. The Duvaliers were also supported by the US government, which knowingly armed and trained the Tonton Macou to enforce what they called peace and stability, albeit the kind found in cemeteries. Over the course of 27 years, the machete-wielding Tonton Macou, in their distinctive straw hats and sunglasses, muted opposition by murdering people at random. The idea was to make ordinary Haitian civilians scared to death of their leader, who, having enshrined voodoo as a national religion, claimed to be Baron Samedi himself, the spirit of the dead. Victims were raped, cut open, or beaten to a bloody pulp in the street, and then left there to rot as a warning to everyone else. More often, though, much like their folklore namesake, the Tonton Macou simply spirited people away in the night. Some of the worst atrocities were committed at the capital's Fort Dimanche, the Auschwitz of Haiti, under the sadistic wrath of Madame Max Adolphe. As Papadoc's right-hand woman, the chief of the all-female branch of the Tonton Macou, the Filet Laleux, Madame Max had a diabolical reputation to uphold. Among other barbaric acts, she is said to have inserted a live rat into a pregnant woman's vagina. Unusually, members of the Tonton Macou were generally unpaid, but in exchange for their loyalty, they could pretty much do whatever they wished. And for many recruits, finally assuming the role of oppressor after years of being oppressed was enough of its own reward. Number 4. The Sheikha, from 1917 to 1922. Lenin's commissar for internal affairs, Felix Dzerzhinsky, knew exactly what he was doing when he set up the All-Russian Extraordinary Commission for Combating Counter-Revolution and Sabotage, VCHK, or Sheikha for short. He knew it changed things. He knew a death squad in black leather trench coats went against the Soviet ideal of a police force with clean hands, a cool head, and a warm heart. But as he put it in 1918, terror is an absolute necessity during times of revolution. The Sheikha, or Chekists as they were called, were pioneers of secret policing, introducing the gulag system of prison camps and a truly bewildering variety of tortures. The enforcers of a burgeoning Bolshevik empire, Chekists were expected to do whatever was necessary to prevent its enemies from organizing. And by the end of the Russian Civil War from 1918 to 1921, they had more than 200,000 members and perhaps the same number of victims. Methods which varied from one Sheikha police force to the next included soaring through the victims' bones, crushing their skulls with a vice, pushing them into furnaces or scalding hot vats, and dousing them in water in the winter to form literal living statues. In Kharkov, the Sheikha preferred to use the glove trick, boiling victims' hands in water and peeling back the skin, while in Voronezh, they preferred rolling people around in barrels studded with nails. Meanwhile, the Chekists of Kiev were known for placing a rat in a cage against victims' bellies and gently applying heat, in turn forcing the rodents to chew through the body in order to survive. In 1922, the Sheikha was formally disbanded, having successfully handled the counter-revolutionary threat. However, the secret police were not abolished entirely. Their functions were simply transferred, under the same leadership, to the somewhat less repressive agency, the State Political Directorate, or GPU. And just 12 years later, Joseph Stalin renamed it to the People's Commissariat for Internal Affairs, or NKVD, and waged a new Great Terror of his own. The genie was out of the bottle. The Sheikha had laid a formidable blueprint and an all-too-convenient precedent for the many secret police forces that were to follow. Not only the NKVD from 1934 to 1943, but also the NKGB 1941 and 1943 to 1946, the MGB 1946 to 1954, the KGB from 1954 to 1991, and even the FSB of today. Number 3. The Santa Baal, from 1971 to 1979. The terrifying efficiency of Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge, which claimed some 2 million lives in Cambodia, more than 20% of the population, in just 4 devastating years, took more than just revolutionary zeal. The shadowy Santa Baal, Khmer for Keeper of the Peace, was indispensable to the regime, tasked with consolidating power, extracting false confessions, and exterminating civilians, all while keeping detailed, meticulous records. A digitized archive of more than 100,000 documents from just one prison camp, Tui Slong, or S21, highlights the sheer bureaucratic burden of genocide, and these are just the papers that survived. Most were summarily destroyed. Tuol's Leng Hill of Poisonous Trees was by far the most notorious of the Khmer Rouge's death camps. It held 20,000 prisoners, 1,500 at a time, between 1976 and 1978. Of these, only 7 were found alive by the liberating Vietnamese army in 1979, apparently having leveraged their skills for clemency. These skills, well, they were painting propaganda and torture scenes, or repairing overused typewriters. Otherwise, as many as 100 prisoners were killed each day, often starved, drowned, or skinned alive. Some had their organs removed without anesthetic, while others had their blood intravenously drained to see how long they survived. Rape was also common, although technically against the rules, and babies were beaten to death. The man in charge of all of this was Kein Uyk Ave, aka Comrade Dutch, a math teacher with monstrous attention to detail. It wasn't until 2010 that he was formally charged with his war crimes and sentenced to life in prison. Number 2. The Kempeitai, from 1881 to 1945. Nicknamed the Japanese Gestapo, the Kempeitai were so excessively ruthless, both inside and outside of Japan during World War II, that the Imperial Japanese Navy had its own military force, the Tokeitai, to protect itself from their agents. Having been cherry-picked for advanced training on the basis of superior intelligence, fitness, and political reliability, every member of the Kempeitai had extraordinary powers to arrest and indefinitely detain practically anyone they wished, including personnel of a higher rank than their own. And much like the samurai whose code they pretended to follow, the Kempeitai had no qualms whatsoever about working with the criminal underworld, so long as it furthered their aims of terrifying Japanese subjects and prisoners throughout East Asia into brutal and abject submission. Anyone they took into custody was automatically presumed to be guilty and very often tortured to death. In Singapore alone, the Kempeitai are thought to have killed 20 to 50,000 anti-Japanese operatives, often for little more than having a tattoo or being able to speak English. Extracting confessions from detainees was naturally a grisly business. According to survivors, the Kempeitai often pumped their victims full of water before jumping or standing on their stomachs. They also poked wooden skewers through their eardrums, dislocated limbs, burned sensitive body parts, staged executions, and threatened to kill their families. As time went on, they came to regard other races as somehow less than human and supplied a great many foreign prisoners, including women and children, to the notorious Unit 731, a human experimentation program that claimed tens of thousands of lives. They also thought nothing of wiping out villages abroad, including the Burmese community of Kalagon, whose 600 inhabitants were all blindfolded, bayoneted, and disposed of in nearby wells. Number 1. The Gestapo, from 1933 to 1945. The Gestapo needs no introduction. For their role in the Holocaust, they're among the best-known police forces on this list, eclipsing many others for their sheer efficiency and scope. Werner Best, the administrative chief of the Gestapo, described the organization as a kind of doctor to the German national body, tasked with locating destructive germs and using all appropriate means to get rid of them. But like any doctor, they were only ever seen by the sick. Despite rumors that agents were everywhere, there were so few in reality, at least compared to other secret police forces, that most ordinary Germans probably never met one. As for who the sick were exactly, this tended to change over time. At the beginning, the Gestapo were mainly looking for political viruses, opposition party members, resistance movements, and the like, but they soon started rounding up what they referred to as vermin, the Jews, gypsies, Slavs, and homosexuals. One of the Gestapo's most notorious methods of diagnosis was to crush suspects' testicles in a vice. Victims who confessed to the crimes they were accused of were then sent off to concentration camps to die. The Gestapo's efficiency and thoroughness in rooting out possible toxins, especially in newly conquered territories, owed much to the cooperation of others. Local police forces, postal workers, civil servants, railway security officers, intelligence agencies, and even civilian informers all had a role to play. In Vichy France in 1943, a whole new paramilitary organization, the French Militia, was set up to aid the Gestapo in suppressing the French resistance. One of the most notorious torture chambers, in fact, lay a short distance from the Eiffel Tower in Paris. Here, in rooms with soundproofed walls, victims were burned alive until only their handprints on the walls remained. Yet throughout their reign of terror, Gestapo agents firmly believed in the work that they were doing. They truly believed that it was good, just as any doctor might. In fact, Reichsführer SS Heinrich Himmler, who helped set up the Gestapo, commended them on their ability to cope with the sight of so many corpses and still remain decent to the end.
So I really hope you enjoyed the audio version of one of our YouTube videos. If you did, please do consider heading over to wherever you get your podcasts and leaving us a review. It'd be greatly appreciated. You can also say hi to me on social media at Simon Whistler. Check out our YouTube channel on YouTube. Just search Top Tens, T-O-P-T-E-N-Z, and I'll see you next time.